Coming up on today's BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast, designing the newest and most cutting-edge BMW motorcycles. Take a listen. Over the years, I've had the privilege of riding BMW motorcycles all over the world. And the one thing I've come away with is that the only thing more extraordinary than the ride are the people you meet along the way. These are their stories. My name is Sean Thomas, and this is BMW Motorrad's Ride and Talk. Just for the benefit of the recording, can you give your names and how you would like yourself described in terms of your positions here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my name is Alexander Buchan, and I'm head of vehicle design. So that means I'm the boss of the geometrical designers.
Mm. Yeah. My name is Harry, and I'm somewhat responsible for strategies, new vehicle kickoffs, let's say, and what else?
you can tell the audience whatever you want, you know.
Ever since my passion for BMW Motorrad began, I've had an insatiable desire to understand the inner workings of the company. Throughout the years, I've tried to piece together the journey that each motorcycle takes from concept to reality. Some of these steps are, of course, highly confidential and therefore very difficult for outsiders to fully visualize. So it was very exciting for my producer, Louise Powers, and I to be invited to the BMW Motorrad Design Studio in Munich, where we interviewed Alexander Buchan and Harry Schmidt, both part of New Vehicle Strategy and Design. As we interview Alex and Harry, you will hear the sounds of a bustling machine shop where new model prototypes are being constructed. Together, we discuss the process of developing new models and talk about the future of motorcycles, including cutting-edge electric platforms and urban mobility. I think where I'd like to start with you guys is the location. We're in a really cool and kind of secretive building, because we had to go through a lot of layers of security just to get into this building. Can you tell us a little bit about where we are?
Okay, yeah. This is basically the Motor Design Studio, where we conceive all the bike concepts, put them in reality. There's a team that is sketching on geometry. There's another team that is doing the color and trim work. There's a team of engineers, and there's also a team for rider's gear and garment, all in the same location. And the noise you're hearing downstairs is actually the model shop, where design models are being built live. So we have, let's say, two-story layout. And on the top, let's say on the command bridge, if you like, The designers can watch the model makers bring their ideas to life. And this is what you're hearing a bit downstairs.
This is already fascinating to me, because you talked about the different departments that are here. And already when you're designing a new motorcycle, everybody has to have their opinion, their idea of the direction that that bike should go. And I don't imagine they're always maybe dovetailed together. They have to develop the bike, it must be a little bit of a wrestling match a little bit to get it to where the designer likes it and the engineer likes it and apparel is happy and whatnot.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's exactly the point. I mean, you have these kind of ping pong game, yeah, between the hierarchy and between the designers from color and trim, as well from geometry, from gear and garment and something. Yeah, as you mentioned already, it's exactly this kind of thing, you know, these kind of friction until you have the right result then later. Yeah.
And there's a vision at the outset. You know, we're trying to create a motorcycle that fills this niche. And with all of the development process, I can't imagine it's easy to stay on track, because a bike being developed, it can go in so many different directions. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, I think developing a bike ready for production is not that difficult than finding the right agreement on the right, like you said, filling of the niche. So how do you position a bike? How do you put it there where you expect the customer to want it? Mm-hmm. This is, I think, very challenging job, where you have a lot of different expectations to fulfill. Mm. And in the end, doing it is like a kind of, I do not want to say routine work, but there is a very particular planning of how many steps you have to take, which step first and which step second, or the testing and everything. Everything is in a generic planning that is, let's say, it has to be followed. It's always very tight in the time frame, but in the end, the interesting part is conceiving the bikes.
Anytime we see a new motorcycle from Motorrad come out, during the promotion of that bike, we'll often see a picture of the motorcycle in a three-dimensional computer screen where they're looking at the design virtually. A lot of times we'll see a model of the bike that's been carved out of clay, for example. What is the real beginning? Is it the chicken or the egg? Does the bike begin in the computer, or does it begin in a sculpture? How does it go?
I mean, usually with a sketch. We try to, first of all, to understand what is the customer's need. First of all, we have a lot of discussions within the design team, of, as well with the sales and marketing department, with the highest level of a motorcycle, of course. We do this kind of ping-pong game and try to interact to find out what is the goal, what is needed exactly for the customer. And then, of course, we go in our design department and start with sketches, with a simple line drawings. It starts all with simple line drawings, and this could happen on an analog, on a real paper, on a blank canvas, so to speak, with a roller pen or something like that. But this could also happen in a computer. And most of the designers draw in the meantime on a computer. And then, of course, you go deeper into it. You start with a general, let's say, general proportion. It could be in a side view, it could be in a perspective. I mean, all the designers have their different approach for that. But in fact, you start with a line drawing, and then you came from the proportion, from the overall proportion, and then you dig more and more into the detail. This is what we usually call these first read, second and third read. Yeah, that we came from the first proportion, what you see, what you realize from 50 meters away. And then you go closer to the bike and you understand the surface treatment and something like that. And if you go really, really close to the bike, then you see these all the details, these nicely done details. This is then the third read, so to speak. Yeah.
How much time typically occurs between the original sketch of a design and seeing that machine in a prototype in the flesh for the first time?
Good question. I mean, this depends really on the and concept bike, or is it a serial production bike, something like the GS or something. I mean, it depends. It could be from 5 years to 1 year. In fact, the overall development phase. You know? Yeah.
When you're developing a motorcycle, I imagine every step of the development process helps you to refine it. Do you find that when there is finally a physical life-size version of the bike in front of you, that there is a lot of design change that happens at that stage? Or is it at that point that you feel the bike is already pretty refined when it's physical?
I think it's pretty far once you put it on the physical stage, because a lot of technical details, or let's say not details, but the gross technical decisions have been made already, like engine size, wheelbase, ergonomics, fuel tank size, and so on, which is already defined. But there is a lot of fine-tuning necessary once you see it first time in life, let's say. It's like bringing it into the gym and giving it the right training so every muscle is in position, let's say. Mm-hmm.
One of the bikes that the two of you work with is the vision of electric motorcycles and where they are and where they are going, yes?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah. Yep. And it's interesting to me because BMW has always been very cutting edge. New technologies, new directions that we don't always necessarily see in a traditional motorcycle. And I don't know of any bike that is more innovative than trying to create the next production level electric motorcycle. It looks to me like this must be a difficult and challenging mindset that transcends what we know about motorcycles. Am I reading this right?
It's funny that you're saying that, because first time I thought it was the opposite. But you
really?
Are right. No, in the end, it's super difficult to build an electric motorcycle because all the constraints are totally different than to what we know from combustion engines. You start thinking, you do not need this heavy block of engine and exhaust system and air intake and everything. But in the end, you have the same challenges, just on a different level. For example, batteries need cooling. And
what I feel is that we as a designer, we have to chop or to slice this elephant into two slices. In fact, it's first these, let's say, the visual part. What are the different in terms of the visual behave of the bike? And then, of course, how much freedom do you have, in fact? And I think it's if you compare these and combustion motorcycle, what we are really used to since decades. We learn the viewing habit and we know exactly what to do. This is a total different thing now with these electric stuff. And there is a certain ratio. You have the heart of the motorcycle. This is, of course, these combustion engine. And then you have the tank over that. And there is a certain ratio, like 1:3 or 1:2, something like that. You have a bigger engine and then there's a small tank or something. It depends of what is the purpose of the bike. And in these electric vehicles, it's totally different. You have a smaller engine. It's really, let's say, simple. It's just a tube. In fact, it's a cylinder. And you have a big battery box, and this is a ratio of 10:1 or something. And because of that, you lose somehow the sexiness of this ratio, of this heart, of this combustion engine. And now instead of that, you have these battery box. And of course, if you talk to these engineers in the beginning, they tell you like, okay, you have a lot of freedom. You can organize the batteries as you want. You can turn them in 90 degrees upstairs or in horizontal, and you can give them any shape. But in fact, if you bring, you know, something into production and you have a kind of, let's say, family behind that, a kind of backbone or something, then the world is totally different. Then you will end up with something that's really scary, really boxy. And this is not what we usually believe into, or what we believe it's sexy somehow, you know? And this is really difficult to deal with these kind of stuff. And if this is defined, this kind of battery box, it's not that easy that you can flip them. Like, and you say, okay, now it's in upright position, let's turn them horizontal. Then you have to do it totally from new, from the beginning. And this is totally, totally different. And then, of course, I mean, a combustion engine, we all know that. There is a certain vibration, there's noises, this is emotion, pure emotion. But these kind of electric stuff is, yeah, totally silent. There's, you have to catch the guys and the motorcycle riders with different things. You have to think about that. This is the tricky thing with that.
It's fascinating to me, the manufacturers that are starting to come out with electric motorcycles, they're showing us that you have to have handlebars, you have to have a seat, the wheels have to be where they always are generally, the headlight needs to be, but beyond that, you can go in just about any direction you want. But at the same time, there is a legacy that must be adhered to, at least to some extent, because it stops looking like a motorcycle if it gets too radical.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have it in your hands, how close you bring it to these, let's say, traditional viewing habit, or how far you can go. This is exactly the experiment we did with a CEO4, what is a hybrid in between a motorcycle and a scooter. So we mixed it quite a bit, turned it upside down, and then of course this was somehow the outcome, this CEO4. And some of the people may find this is already too radical, others like it, but yeah, you as a designer, you have it somehow in your hands. But of course, all the, let's say, the hierarchies must agree on that, or must behind that, and must say like, okay, we want that or not. This is, yeah, somehow the point. The same with the CE04.
Yeah, and what's fascinating between CE04, which before this was the C-Evolution, and the C-Evolution really looked like a conventional scooter, but with an electric drivetrain. And then the CE04, by comparison, was a very radical change, but it would have been far more radical if the C-Evolution had not been in there first. We had to have this step. Of course, we've seen the CE02 concept, which is even more radical than the CE04. And yet you still have carried some of those components of legacy from internal combustion motors. How do we get the sound back?
That's such a tough one. Very good question.
Yeah.
Actually, we're really fighting to get away all of the disturbing noise that is there because the electric engine is so silent.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you hear everything else that is really disturbing. So sound requirements are all of a sudden much, much fiercer than they were before.
You know, we rode electric motorcycles together. Yeah. And it, two blocks down the road, we realized we're able to carry on a conversation riding side by side on motorcycles because they're so quiet. And that was a really nice benefit. But at the same time, there is so much emotion that comes from the sound.
True.
And trying to connect with that emotion when it's an electric bike, it's a different experience.
I found that the first time I rode an electric motorcycle, one of the things I loved was just hearing the wind.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. It's a complete different thing riding an electric motorcycle. And of course, yeah, we are missing these noises, these vibrations of these of the engine. But of course, you get so you can have a conversation between your motorcycle mates, and you can feel the wind. You can smell something. You know, there is no other fumes from the combustion. I think this it's a real benefit. But of course, it's different. You need a certain acceptance for that, of course.
My expectation is that somehow we will get used to having this noiselessness and effortlessness. So it's a little bit, when you, for example, compare it to a small combustion engine, whenever you want to squeeze out the full power, it sounds a bit stressed somehow, yeah? And if you get the same power out of a small electric bike, it doesn't sound stressful. It just sounds as easy as going downhill on a bicycle, which I love.
It's interesting when we look at it from the perspective of generation, you know, because older generation, you know, there's always going to be people in that group that are happy with innovative technology, but there's going to be the group that says only internal combustion. I do not, I'm not interested in a bike that is so different. But then you have the next generation, the younger, maybe they're a little bit more acceptable to this. And you guys, you're young guys. And
oh, nice. You say that.
Really charming. I love that. Can you do it again?
So you've got, you know, our current generation, which may or may not be more or less accepting of a bike that transitions into electric, but then you're also developing bikes for the younger generation. This bike's for them, and for them, internal combustion is not so important anymore, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. You also see these electrical kick scooters standing around everywhere. This is what they're used to. And now their career, so to say, will be that they will step on more and more powerful electric devices, let's say. Which means they are not coming from this experience of knowing that a loud, bassy engine is powerful.
Yeah.
They just hear that maybe from their parents or grandparents, but not that's not their own experience. So I would expect that they kind of naturally grow into like more and more powerful electric bikes and never missing that.
One of the most interesting transitions I had when riding an electric vehicle was that my mindset is always around fuel. So my thinking is that I have so many kilometers I can ride before I have to get gas. And of course, with an electric motorcycle, that's quite a bit different. So my first thought is that was a limitation because I have to go plug the thing in and it's got to sit there for quite a while before I can move. But then I had another revelation, which was I used less power when I was riding aggressively on the twisty roads than I did when I was just riding in a straight line on the highway, which is exactly the opposite of what I experience on a bike with internal combustion. That is because of regenerative braking. You know, as I'm rolling off the throttle and adding a little bit of power, rolling on the throttle, rolling off versus just being on it full on. And how are elements like this, do you feel, transitioning in the mindsets of riders as we begin to embrace electric vehicles?
I think you will just have to get used to it somehow. I cannot give you a recipe on how to ride an electric bike so you're happy all the time. I think it's something that people will have to try out themselves and find their own solutions to. But when you, for example, look at electric car customers, you almost hear nobody complain about the low range of his car. All the benefits they find are much higher.
I feel like we seem to be at the stage where people are willing to accept an electric vehicle as something they add to their stable. You know, I've got this bike where I can ride around town on, but I also still have my internal combustion bike. Is this the norm, or how is the public generally accepting this technology?
I think the acceptance is getting higher and higher. I don't know how you see it, but you have these combustion ones, you have these electric ones, and you can deal with this kind of stuff. Nobody's saying like, okay, you just have to take this kind of electric stuff and be happy with this kind of stuff. But yeah, this is the good thing that we have both for the purpose you need.
I mean, it's no accident that we started with commuter bikes as electric vehicles, because there we know very precisely what customer needs are. They need to get from A to B and so on. So it's easier to, let's say, convince people where they can fulfill their practical needs.
Mm.
And let's say motorcycling as a spare time hobby is something completely different, where you do not count the pros and cons like in an Excel sheet and say, okay, this is why I ride motorcycles. You would just say you want it. And I think time will bring us to the point that also in this leisure segment, the mindset will change sooner or later.
Mm.
But this will take time, and of course it will need the experience of other people being happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, we can see how different regions of the world embrace motorcycling different and for different reasons. For many, it's all about commuting. For many, it is all about leisure and everything in between. Do you find that some regions have wholeheartedly accepted electric vehicles over others? It's my understanding that France, for example, has a very big influx of like the C Evolution when it came out. That was a very important motorcycle for them for law enforcement and other reasons. As the CE04 comes out, have you seen this being embraced in different ways in different countries?
I do not travel that often. But I've been sometimes in India now. Certain reason, and
yeah, sure.
There you see motorcycles as commuters everywhere.
Mm.
And very interesting, you see also really surprisingly sharing vehicles, sharing electric scooters, where you think, where do they put them? How do they get them? It's like really crazy. In a developing country, in some aspects they are ahead of us. In Europe,
we had these kind of history as well when we look back in the early 60s or something, or let's say 50s as well, when it was an really cheap transport option to go from A to B.
Yeah.
And then later, of course, the cars became cheaper and cheaper. And then, of course, yeah, money-wise, the people were somehow able then to pay for a car. And then, of course, a car was more flexible. So this was more a kind of, let's say, a need to go from A to B in the early times. And this is what I see in these countries like India or something. These countries where we can see so many two-wheelers. And now when we look at Europe or United States or something, you have these the two-wheeler is more a kind of luxury. That's why I think you have these kind of misbalance in the different countries, yeah, like India, where you have a lot of two-wheelers.
It's been my experience that the development of a motorcycle platform takes many years, mm-hmm. from concept to something that is available for production. And this is interesting with electric vehicles because the technology that goes into an electric vehicle is getting better every year. We see pretty big leaps in technology. I'm curious, how does that affect your development process of a vehicle when you have so many years of development and the technology that's propelling it is elevating so fast?
Well, when we start to develop a new electric motorcycle, we are not taking just existing technology, mm-hmm. which will be outdated then 5 years later.
Yeah.
We are also developing this technology at the same time. So mm-hmm. we're not like taking parts from the shelf, let's say batteries from Panasonic or whoever.
Sure.
And then say, okay, this is it. This is also development in process, also the internal component. Mm. So that means we will be up to date once our bikes are released.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, because of these proper, let's say, forecasts. I mean, we have departments there. Yeah, they're checking exactly, you know, what kind of technology is then in 5 years, in 7 years or something, exactly up to date. And yeah, we spend a lot of energy into these kind of research stuff. And that's why I think we are pretty precise in these kind of stuff. And it's not then old fashioned, you know, it is in 5 years when the product came into the market. And then suddenly you find out like, oh, damn, the battery is so outdated or something. This will not happen. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
It seems like the C Evolution felt like we were sort of putting our toe in the water and saying, let's see what can be done with this electric vehicle if we create a platform and we utilize some elements from the car side. And now we have the CE04, which is completely unique. It doesn't seem like there's anything that's brought over from the cars. Is that going to be the future, do you think, of electric vehicles?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we now learning is also to see the benefits out of this electrical layout. So, for example, you do not need any foot brake or foot gear shifting anymore. You do not need any clutch anymore. Mm. So that means that gives you more freedom for ergonomics.
Yeah.
And that's what you, for example, see very well at the CE04. Mm-hmm. You can put your feet everywhere you want. You can sit everywhere you want. You mm-hmm. just need to have your hands in place. That's it.
It makes it so much more comfortable. I mean, this was really somehow fascinating. When I first had the possibility to ride the CE04, I was in the inner city of Munich. And exactly as you said, Harry, you know, you could sit everywhere. You can sit in front and the back, and you could use the front foot plates or the footrest on the back. This is really fascinating. You're also much more flexible. It's really cool.
And we're really stressing that. Yeah. So this is something we really play with it. Mm-hmm. Despite the bike is so small, you still have the chance to sit wherever you want, whatever size your body is. So it will fit for persons from 1.50 meters to 1.90 meters easily. Mm-hmm. Then also more sporty or more relaxed riding position, which would not be possible on a combustion engine.
We're looking at the CE02, the concept photos, and you know they have the skateboard mounted underneath, which is so cool. And so we had this debate together, you know, where do you have to have the skateboard, or will there be foot pegs and it can slide underneath? Will there be a skateboard spot? But for me, it's going, I have to learn how to ride a skateboard now.
It's super. You just have to pass the motorcycle with a surfboard on, right?
Yeah, that is
true. It's the same story, more or less.
That's an interesting point you make, because you walk into the entryway and you've got an R9T with a surfboard mounted to it, which I saw that many years ago and I thought, that is so innovative. That's so cool. Now it's like, we've actually seen that in the real world, you know, motorcycles riding around with surfboards in Munich.
Yeah.
And so now we go, all right, so now the scooter with a skateboard is going to be the new thing, but maybe that will be the norm soon. What are you going to put on next?
let's see. I've seen skis already, snowboards.
We've definitely seen bicycles.
Bicycles.
Lots of bicycles
mounted,
mounted on motorcycles around the U.S.
Really? Cool. I like that. I like that one.
How it should, I don't know.
we were just in Berlin during the summertime. We were in Berlin, and they had rideshare scooters. So you could go up to a scooter, and you could use your phone to activate it. There was a helmet already under the seat. You could take it out and ride around town. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that is such a cool idea.
Yeah.
And now imagine that concept with an electric vehicle attached to a charger. You know, I need to ride my electric vehicle around town. I'll just take one of the rideshare it goes. It's like the opportunities are really boundless.
It's cool. Yeah. It is absolutely cool. But please keep in mind, I mean, this was just an option, or was just an offer from us. So an example how to use it. I mean, of course, you can take also other things. You know, it's not just a skateboard. Just what fits into, what is your personal need? You can also take your computer, your laptop or something and store it in there. Yeah,
this is fascinating, I imagine, too, because you come out with a concept and you put it out there for the world to see, and the world reacts to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got their own ideas. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's ideas that you look at each other and go,
exactly,
didn't think of that. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we pitched in with something, and of course you get so many crazy ideas. Other, let's say, creativity comes back then to you. And of course, this inspires us as well. Of course.
But of course, on the outside, you can go, yeah, we thought of that the whole time.
Of course. Yes.
The most thought-through concept ever.
So is the future for electric vehicles as bright as it looks for Motorrad? We see a big future coming for this, maybe, yeah?
I keep my thumbs crossed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to that thing, because also giving, let's say, all this environmental discussion and everything, I think we cannot afford to miss that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the social acceptance as well. I mean, we have often these kind of problems with the combustion ones in the mountains or something, these mountain villages. There's so much noise, noise pollution of these motorcycle guys. I mean, I like them, but of course I understand with these village guys as well. And they have really kind of problem with this. So that's why I'm really looking forward that we have these electric revolution, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Guys, it's really been good talking to you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It was good.
Good stuff. We very much hope you have enjoyed this episode. We want to hear from you, so please rate, comment, and share your thoughts about this podcast. We have many more episodes on the way, so please subscribe, follow along, and share your requests for future episodes of the BMW Motorrad Ride and Talk podcast.